LDSHomeschoolConference.com presents this digital recording from 2012.
Okay, I think we'll start out with this, because I feel like starting out with it. Okay, number one, start.
Why do we read?
Oh, wait, sorry, quick preface. Okay. This is written by Elder Bruce C. Hafen as a foreword to a biography he wrote about Elder Neil A. Maxwell. Okay, go.
Why do we read, let alone write biographies? Since ancient days, we have been taught the gospel by stories. The accounts of the war in heaven, the Garden of Eden, and Cain and Abel are the first stories showing what happens when people try to live God's teachings or don't live them. The New Testament is itself a story about Jesus, who he was, what he taught, and what he did. Christ's life is a story of giving the atonement. The story of Adam and Eve is a story of receiving the atonement. As we experience mortality the way our first parents did, struggling with the opposition between good and evil, we can look at Eve or at Adam and say, that is the story of my life. Then when we tell our own stories to others, we realize that the cosmic quest to overcome evil and find God is our very personal quest.
Number two.
Our own testimonies are true and often powerful stories that capture vivid detail how the Lord blesses us, protects us, changes us, and helps us to overcome. Nothing brings the Spirit into a conversation or a classroom more than hearing people bear honest testimony, not so much by exhortation as by just telling the story of their personal experience.
Number three.
The scriptures are primarily a collection of stories given to us because God directed prophets to recount their experiences to us. In his desire to give us guidance about life, God could have given us a large rule book or a series of grand philosophical essays, but he didn't. He gave us stories about people like ourselves. Again and again, the Book of Mormon writers tell us about someone's experience and say, quote, and thus we see, unquote. J.R.R. Tolkien's understanding of the power of stories played an important part in the conversation of his friend C.S. Lewis to Christianity, conversion of his friend C.S. Lewis to Christianity. Tolkien helped Lewis see that the story of Christ's life conveys a fuller meaning to our minds than abstract statements of doctrine and reason can convey. He explained that the abstract ideas of Christianity are too large and too all-embracing for their finite mind to absorb them. That is why the divine providence revealed himself in a story. The insight helped Lewis realize why he had felt that certain classical stories were profound and suggestive of meaning beyond his grasp, even though he could not say in cold
prose
what it meant. Like the stories of other disciples, this book is the story of one person's discoveries about applying the story of Jesus to his own life. Neil Maxwell's story offers more understanding than at least my cold prose could have offered in an essay about discipleship and what it means.
Okay. So, did everybody kind of get the gist of that? Any thoughts?
And ahas,
oh, that
connects to this. Oh,
ooh, that was really cool.
Okay. Yeah, I got one. I didn't know. I thought C.S. Lewis was a Christian thinker. I guess he's not.
He was an atheist for a long time.
Wow. He was raised Christian, and then he was an atheist for a while.
Sorry, really quick, guys. Try to talk loud so that the camera can pick up.
So, one thing I find interesting about the whole, you know, concept of finding messages and, you know, stories and parables and whatnot is that they're about people just like us. The scriptures, the people in that, technology is different, time is different, but there are still people just like us. And that helps us to see how all these principles can be applied to us, rather than just like a list of essays saying, do this, this, and this. We don't see how it fits in with us,
yeah,
without the story.
Humanity is eternal. There are eternal laws that govern human nature, and that's what makes great literature so great, is that there's still people, and we're still people, yeah, just like they were people. And you can see that a lot clearer through stories than just an essay. Any other thoughts? Okay, we'll move on. Like, if you have any thoughts, any like, oh, that's kind of cool, or oh, that kind of sucks, even if it's unrelated, even if it's a tangent, if you have any awesome epiphanies, writing a novel, let's just raise your hand and be like, oh, fuck, oh, question, or anything like that. Love to have the discussion. That's where the best learning comes, is when you guys teach the lesson instead of me. So, like, I'll feed it, but I want you guys to comment too as much as you can, whenever you have ideas. Okay, so, what was I going to say? Oh yeah, how many of you were in Mr. Martineau's simulation earlier today?
In here?
Yeah. Most of you. Okay. He talked about values and how they're so ubiquitous. That word basically means they're everywhere. But we never think about them. We take them for granted. We don't realize how much impact they really have on every single thing we do every single day. Stories are so much like that. We have the stories of the scriptures. We have fairy tales that everybody knows. Who doesn't know the story of Cinderella? Exactly. Everybody knows the story of Cinderella. Everybody knows Sleeping Beauty. Everybody knows the story of the boy who cried wolf. Everybody knows the story of the ugly duckling. They are so common in our culture, and they are so often told that we take them for granted, and we don't realize the true power that they really hold, and how much they influence us, just how much they mean. Yeah?
Like, that totally applies to me right now. Like, when Alyssa mentioned the other stuff, like, I thought, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that story even existed, and that's a really good story with a really good message, and I need to, I should read that story.
Yeah.
When we hear someone giving a talk and we hear a story that's popularly known, especially in LDS culture, we just kind of zone out for a little bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just had something that is kind of tangential to this, but I was thinking that with fairy tales, like people talk about fairy tales and not believe it a lot, and I think about how, like, if you read like the original fairy tale, lots of them are really weird.
Split down the middle.
And all of a sudden, realize it's the one, the versions that are here now are the versions that lasted, and it's the stories that last a long time that are.
Yeah, exactly. That's really interesting. Lately, I've been like going to the library and getting lost fairy tales because I used to do it all the time when I was little. I went to the fairy tale wing of the library, I got all the books I could, and I went home and I read them all, and probably most of those. I think I've read almost every single book in that fairy tale wing. Like, I was going back very recently, and I was like, oh, I read that one, and that one, and that one. I was like, most of these books. So I went back and I read a couple of them, and I got several different Cinderella stories, and they were all from different cultures. Like, there was a Korean one, there was a French one, there was, like, more of an American one, and there was one from another culture. I can't remember what. But they all, like, have their roots in those cultures back hundreds and hundreds of years. Same story with some of the exact same elements, and like, it made me wonder, like, how far back did those stories come from? Does Cinderella have roots in the gospel somewhere, and is that why it's so, like, spread out through all the earth? Because, you know, everyone came from Adam and Eve, from Noah, from all that. We all have that same basic gospel heritage. I haven't looked into that enough to, like, present a solid, like, here's some facts on this yet. Just a thought.
No, that was really interesting. Isn't,
yeah,
so the idea of it, like, the story wasn't told by Noah to all his children and passed it on. Like, the principle that is, like, everybody has.
and make a story about it.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool how stories resonate with just about everyone. Everybody has different stories that resonate with them, like the guys might not relate to Cinderella so much, but they have they have other stories that they relate to, like Warrior. If any of you guys have seen the new movie, like I have a couple friends who are really like connect with that. They're like, yeah, I'm going to be a better man now because I watched that movie, because I heard that story. There's all sorts of different stories that connect with different people. Right now, do you all have something to write? Like,
I do. Okay.
If you have something, get it out. I want you to write down 5 stories that are your favorites, that have impacted your life the most, or that you resonate with, that you just, when you read it, you just feel it and you just love it. Write down 5.
You have till a half an hour.
So recently, I've been wondering, why are stories so powerful? Why does everybody love stories? Why do we have stories? Why do we always tell stories? And, like, it's usually the stories that create the biggest difference. It's not necessarily when somebody stands at the sacrament meeting and tells you, like the quote said, it's not like writing an essay and reading an essay that changes your life. It's hearing the stories about people who did things, who became things, who made changes, who fell, who failed. Those are the things that change us, those things that make the difference. So I was wondering, like, okay, what is the, how would you say that? Not anatomy, that's not the right word, but I'll use it anyway because I can't think of a better word. The anatomy of what happens when a story comes from another person to another person. Like, what is the change that happens there? Why does it happen? How does it happen? So I looked it up and I found this study by 2 guys whose last name is Apple and Riker, and they're from the University of Cologne. No, that's not how you pronounce it, but that's how it looks. And they did this study called The Persuasive Effects of Fictional Narratives. And I read through not all of it, but a good chunk of it. And it was really interesting. They said that stories are more persuasive than typical external or explicit attempts to change opinions and beliefs through facts, through speeches, through arguments and claims. They did these tests on people and they had them read these stories without knowing what they were doing first. And they had little things in there, like the way people brush their teeth or just like random little things like that. And they found that just by reading those stories, people changed their actions. They changed their habits. They changed who they were. Just little ways. But they changed. Just by reading that story. And if somebody had come out and said, I think they did other tests too, where they like told them, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this, and like presented arguments and claims to them, and like, yeah, that didn't work. You wouldn't change like the way you brush your teeth because somebody told you to. That's just stupid. But you read it in a book. You find a character you connect with. You read a story, and it changes you. Another part, another element to this is what they call the sleeper effect. It's not necessarily an immediate change that happens, but it's over a long amount of time. While normal attempts to change opinions and beliefs through speeches, through facts, through claims, through stuff like that, they wear off over time. Your belief in them, your follow-through with them, your passion or whatever, it wears off over time. But when they have the stories, it actually grew over time, the change in their beliefs. There's a part of your brain, I can't remember what it's called. I know, I'm so, like, scientific today. I'm sorry. But there's a part of your brain that takes everything it sees as reality. Or everything it hears, it assumes everything is real. It assumes everything is true. That's why when you're watching a movie, you can get so into it. When you're watching a person and they're suffering, you feel for them. You feel like you're there. That's why you can get so wrapped up in a book and lose yourself in the story and it feels like you're actually there. Because there's a part of your brain that actually believes that everything you're experiencing, everything you're reading about, everything you're seeing, everything you're hearing is real and is true. And also, there's an innate part of us that wants to make lines, that wants to see things as black and white. Your brain likes to categorize things, to simplify things. That's what your brain does. That's the way you can cope with the world around you. Your brain simplifies things. It likes to simplify things into good and bad, or right and wrong, or I like this and I don't like this. So often, you'll pick a hero and a villain for the story. The problem is, the hero in the story is not necessarily always completely good. But if you're not careful, your brain will automatically assume that everything that hero does is good, because you picked them as a hero. Same with the villain. You automatically assume that, and this is like all in the subconscious, this is things like you don't even realize most of the time. You assume you have the villain, so you assume that everything that the villain does is evil, even if there are some things that they appear good. Unless the story is extremely well written and they illustrate really clearly that, like, look, there's like Les Mis is a perfect example of the book, not the play, don't like the play. love the music, just not the storyline of the play. At the end of that book, I went through thinking, I don't know who is good and who is evil. People are just people. And that was awesome. There are some books that do that for you, and those are great. But most of the time, your brain will separate it into good and evil. And it did at the beginning of that book for me anyway. A lot of what we do with stories, with all of our life, is just intuitive. We act the way we do because we see other people act. You learn to speak through just listening to other people speak and assuming, oh, this means this, or this means this, just connecting things with things. You didn't consciously do it. You were a baby. You didn't have that much cognitive power yet. You just learn intuitively how to speak. You learn intuitively how to walk, how to crawl, how to think, how to eat. There was some teaching process that went on, but most of it is just intuitive. It's the same with stories. We absorb a lot of it intuitively. In every story, in every book, in everything that's told, there's a basic philosophical foundation. For those of you who are in Mr. Marner's simulation earlier, it's those basic values. We all have a set of values, of things that we believe are good. We have a worldview and a paradigm. That comes through in every book that an author writes. You can see their worldview. You can tell what's important to them. You can see their values by the way they write, the things they write, the way their heroes are, the way their villains are. And your subconscious accepts that as true as you read it. It accepts the paradigm that it's there. And that paradigm becomes part of yours, unless you consciously reject it. And that does happen fairly often, too. I'm sure you've all had an instance where you're reading through a book and you found something and you said, oh, that's wrong. I don't like that. I'm not accepting that as the truth. You recognize it on a conscious level, and so that can become part of you. But when you don't do that, it does become part of you. One example is I used to watch TV a lot, and I watched Disney Channel, and I loved it. And one of my favorite shows was Wizards of Waverly Place. And I loved Selena Gomez. I thought she was gorgeous. I thought she was beautiful. I thought she was awesome. And without even realizing it, just by watching that show over and over again, I started to act like her. I started to adopt her mannerisms. I started to adopt the way she treated her siblings, the way she interacted with her parents, the way she interacted with everyone else. When I recognized it, then I was able to stop it. Because I recognized, oh, this is not good. I don't like that. That isn't right. That isn't who I want to be. So I was able to separate the two. How many of you have heard of the story of Arabian Nights? Doesn't want Arabian Nights with Scheherazade and all the tales.
I've heard of it.
A couple. Okay. Basically, there is a king. And this is a Middle Eastern story. Yeah, Middle East. I'm not exactly sure where it takes place. It's different depending on the tale you read. King Shahryar had a queen. He loved her with all of his heart. He devoted his whole heart to her, his whole life, all of his energy and passion. He loved her so much. One day, he found her cheating on him with one of his slaves. He was so heartbroken. His trust and all his life, his paradigm was shattered so much that he had her executed. And every single night after that, he would marry a new wife and have her beheaded in the morning. Every single day. This went on for a long time. Until the storyteller's daughter, well, okay, this also depends on which version you read. Sometimes it's the storyteller's daughter, sometimes it's like his vizier, who's like his counselor's daughter. It just depends. I like the storyteller's daughter better because it makes more sense. Storyteller's daughter volunteers to marry him. So she marries him, he comes in, and she has her little, she plans with her little sister that she'll run in and like clean through and say, please just tell me one last story. And it works, and the king says, okay, whatever, tell her a story. So Scheherazade spends the whole night telling a story to the king. And she tells a story of betrayal, of a woman who betrayed a man, these awful stories, and gruesome things happened to her, and she got the punishment she deserved, and it was all good. But just as it was coming to the peak of the story, it was dawn, and time for her to be executed. The king wanted to hear the rest of the story, so he let her live another day. She continued the story and went into another one, very smooth and tricky-like. And she continued this pattern for 1,001 nights. Every single night, the king wanted to hear the rest of her stories, so he let her live. Well, in the beginning, she told him stories that would capture his attention, stories of revenge, stories that resonated with the emotions that he was feeling. Slowly and deftly, she started to implement virtues into the stories she was teaching. She started to tell stories of women who were faithful, of women who did great things, who helped people. She started to tell stories of virtuous leaders, of good kings and the things that they did. And after a while, because of the stories she told, the king changed. The king fell in love. And he vowed never again to kill another wife. And they lived happily ever after and had lots of children. It's not just a story. It actually happens. Stories change people. Stories change lives. One example, and this is more of an example of consciously letting a story change you, rather than subconsciously the virtues and the beliefs of the author changing your, or being inculcated into your beliefs and your paradigm. I read The Hiding Face when I was probably 13. We read it for an English class, and has anybody read it? Okay, so there's a woman, and she's Christian, but she lives in Germany, and she lives in Holland, and her family hides Jews, and she's an amazing person. They go through a lot of trouble to save these Jews, and they save a lot of people, but in the end, they end up being caught. She's sent to a concentration camp along with her sister. They're fairly old at this time. Her sister dies while they're in the concentration camp. She witnesses terrible, terrible things. The guards are very cruel to them. All that stuff that happened in the concentration camps. Afterwards, so she survives the concentration camp. She gets out and she starts going and teaching people to forgive, to get on with their life. She talks to people who were in concentration camps. She tries to rehabilitate them and help them. One day, after a lecture she was presenting, someone came up to her and said, I was the guard at the concentration camp you were in. I was the one that did some of those terrible things to you. Will you forgive me? And he put out his hand and asked for forgiveness. And in that moment, she thought, how can I not forgive him when I'm out preaching to everybody else forgiveness and letting go of what's past and moving on with life? But she didn't physically have the power within herself, so she prayed and she said, God, I'll take his hand. You supply the feeling. She shook his hand, and as she did, a feeling came over her from her toes to her head. She felt such love for him. She forgave him. She was able to feel it, to forgive him. I read that story, and it was so powerful to me. It was so moving, so touching, that I resolved then and there, I will never hold a grudge. I will never be angry at people. I will never hold resentment and bitterness toward people ever again. And for the most part, I've kept that promise. I don't get angry at people very easily. I still need to work on being slower to be irritated with my siblings. But I don't hold grudges. I don't hold resentment because I made that commitment at that time, and it has changed my life. Shakespeare is really powerful for a lot of people because he portrays human nature so vividly, because he portrays the vice and the bad consequences that it leads to so vividly. And the tragedies, the definition of a tragedy is where a character has some vice, that some failing, some weakness, that eventually leads to his death. And that's what Shakespeare teaches, is that these things, revenge, greed, pride, they lead to death. That is the ultimate end of sin. I was listening to a lady speak once, and she talked about how when she was 17, she read Othello, and I don't really like know the whole plot line, so I can't tell you the whole story, but basically, there's a man, his wife betrays him, or no, there's a man, and another person convinces him that his wife betrays him, so he kills his wife, when his wife actually loved him a lot, and he loved his wife more than anything else, and he ends up killing himself, and yeah, it ends that way. And Iago is the man who tells him to do all these things because of his greed and his pride and his revenge for this guy. And so the lady that was telling the story, so she read that. And afterwards, anytime she felt jealous of anyone, anytime she felt like she wanted to avenge something, she would just look at her shoulder and say, "Down, Iago!" And it was gone. She had no more desire because of the book that she had read. Seneca, who was an ancient Greek dude, said the purpose of education is to prepare our hearts and minds for the reception of virtue. That is true education. That is what stories and books can do for you. That's why we need classes. Okay, I'm going to stop really quick. Any questions? Any thoughts? I've been spewing a lot at you.
Great, just keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, on there, I want to report the next one. Yeah, and I also thought it was really cool in the quote how Elder Hafen said that, talked about how scriptures are stories. They're not a list, it's not an essay of things that we have to do. There are some lectures in the Book of Mormon, there are some discourse, but it's part of the story. And it's the story often that we apply to our lives the most. And I thought it was really cool what he said about how the Savior, the divine providence, manifested himself in the story. And that's what converted C.S. Lewis, is when he realized that the gospel is a story. And then he went on to write some of the greatest stories that we have that teach, that purposely teach virtue, that purposely bring us closer to God. Another powerful thing about stories is that they lift us up from out of the mundane. They remind us who we are. They remind us that we're not necessarily from this place, that we came from heaven. We were part of a great war. We were part of a battle, an epic battle. We are still part of an epic battle against evil that will never end. We are great. We have the potential to become gods and goddesses, kings and queens, priests and priestesses. And that's another one of the appeals of stories, is that they lift us up out of the mundane. Kind of going along with that, some of the greatest insights I've had about my mission and what I need to do in life have come from reading stories. One thing, one time that I remember most vividly when I first started to realize that I could discover parts of my mission from stories was when I was reading Lord of the Rings. It was the last book. It was at the very end. Oh, close to the very end. It was a final battle. Everyone was fighting. It was an epic duel. The, what is it called, Nazgul had just flown in. Everybody was fighting. Frodo was getting close to the mountain. And you could see that the end was close. You could see that it was going to turn out well. There was going to be a struggle. There was going to be sacrifice. But it was going to turn out. They were fighting against evil. They were fighting for their children, their wives, their family, their freedom, their religion, essentially. They were fighting for all that was good. They lost hope. My heart more than anything else. I had tears streaming down my face as I was reading. And every now and then Gandalf would come and they would be happy when he was there and they would have some little bit of hope and then he would leave and all would be despair again. I wanted to be there so bad. I wanted to go so I could cry out to them, so I could talk to them, so I could say, "Hope, courage, courage, brethren, shall we not go on in so great a cause? Courage and on to the victory. Look forward and not backward. You're fighting for a great cause. There is hope. There is a greater power at work here. You know that. Please, just have hope. Don't despair. You can make it. You can win. You can get through." All my heart. I want you to fight. I was these speeches in my head for like the rest of the day of things I wanted to say to them. And then I realized, that's my mission. Hope. I want to bring people hope. I want to help people who are lost, who are in despair, who can't see the big picture of where they are, who have lost the vision and can't see that they're there, that they're almost there, that they're fighting against evil. They're continuing the great battle which was started in heaven. They are here for a reason. They have a purpose. There is hope. There is and always will be hope through the atonement, through Christ, through the Savior. They just have to turn to them. Just look up. There is always hope. That was a really powerful experience for me, reading that and realizing just how much I wanted to talk to people. How much I always love speaking. I love debating. I love being in front of people. But in that moment, I found a purpose, a deep and abiding purpose. And that's stuck with me ever since. Okay. Now, let's see. Where else? Another story that has always been really powerful for me is the story of Joan of Arc, or the biography of Joan of Arc by Mark Twain. And it was so powerful. I wanted with all my heart to be up there with her. I wanted to lead the armies of American Revolution to regain our freedom, to become free once again, to return the country to God, to lead the armies. But there was part of me that knew that wasn't right. But I still resonated with her and her character and what she did. And I realized after a while it was because she was a shining example of virtue amidst the dark and fallen world. She was able to communicate with the angels of heaven. She was called of God, and she was pursuing that path which she felt called to do. She would go through her camps, and she would inspire hope in the men that were there. The cause of France was pretty much lost when she got there, but she was able to give the people hope. She was able to lead them out of the bondage they were in. She was able to restore order to the camps and virtue. She made sure her camps were clean and that her men were. And that was something that really connected with me. That was something, that is something I feel called to do. To be an example of virtue. To help people see the value of virtue. To be happy. To bring back that hope when people feel lost. Another person I've always really resonated with, and I haven't analyzed this one nearly as much, but it's Lucy from Narnia. I always felt a connection with her. I always felt like I loved her, and I was like her. Because she was always so happy and so innocent and so pure and so good. And she was always the one that saw Aslan. And she was the one that got to come and tell the people. And I wanted to be like that. I felt like that also was part of my mission. I wanted to be more like her. just remember this note I have here. It's part of the, like how stories remind us who we really are and where we came from. I thought of the story of Hercules, like the song that he sings, I have often dreamed of a far off place where a great warm welcome will be waiting for me. He always felt like he was out of place where he was, because he was born to be a god. He wasn't a humble, he wasn't a lowly farmer. Not that I'm saying farmers are lowly at all. It's just the example of like a peasant, the lower class, yeah. Farmers are amazing. I would marry a farmer. but you know, just the stereotypes of the time, the farmers were the lower class people. He wasn't a lower class man. He was born to be a god. And he felt that in him. And he wanted to go out and find it. Okay, that's right. that is the power of stories. They help us to experience vicariously the lives of others. We can vicariously experience hundreds of lives, hundreds of experiences, hundreds of situations. We can see where we can help, where we can make a difference, where there are holes that we can fill, where there are things that we can do, things that we love, things that we don't want to do. We can feel the sorrow of others as they make mistakes and determine never to do it again. We can feel the triumph of others as they overcome sin, as they overcome temptation, and determine to be more like that, to be strong, to be greater, to be a better person. For a while, a couple years ago, I never really had a strong testimony of good men. Like, I didn't doubt it. I knew it was true, but it was just something that you know is true, like, you know, that World War II happened. It's not like, it was just history. I never had a real burning testimony of the prophet Joseph Smith that I could share with people, that I wanted to tell people, I know Joseph Smith is a prophet. And then, so I decided I wanted to study his life, and we were learning about prophets in seminary. And I read a lot about Joseph Smith, and I read about his experiences. Well, we were studying the Doctrine and Covenants, that's what it was. And Brother Taggart was actually my seminary teacher at the time. And we watched a bunch of videos about the early saints, things that they did, Joseph Smith leading them. And it was through the stories that I read about him. It was through seeing his life, seeing what he did, what he went through, the kind of person he was, that I gave the testimony of Joseph Smith. And now I can tell you without a doubt that I know Joseph Smith is a prophet. That he was one of the most amazing men that have ever lived. And I know it because of the stories that I read, his life, and the amazing man that he was. And another thing that stories can do for you is, as I watched Joseph Smith, as I watched his life, I would look at him and say, I want to marry a husband like that. I want someone who is going to love people so much, who is strong, who is compassionate, who is so close to God, so willing to do everything that he's asked to do. That's the kind of person I want to marry. And then at the same time, that's the kind of person that I want to be worthy to marry. That's the kind of person that I want to be. My time's up now, or I need to wrap up. Okay. So, remember that as you go throughout your life, as you read the stories, be aware of the things that they're teaching. Consciously choose to accept or reject what is being taught, and look for opportunities to find your mission. Look at the stories that you wrote down. Find what it is about those stories that you connect with, that you resonate with, and you'll find part of your mission.